Just take a moment and let's just expand the universe a little bit, shall we?
You must unlearn what you have learned.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Caulfield Kenobi presents Legends Library.
There's always a bit of truth in legends.
Routine information is not repeat, not simply shouted in the general direction of its intended recipient. Is that clear?
To defeat an enemy, you must learn.
Now here are your hosts, Luke Siders and Randy Theriault.
But enough of this. You've come a long way to challenge me. Make a worthy effort.
Hey everybody, I'm Randy.
And I'm Luke.
And you're listening to Legends Library. We're a podcast dedicated to the Legends line of Star Wars books. And this month we are talking about three different books. Dark Journey would be the first one that we're going to be talking about. And a duology written by Aaron Alston, Rebel Dream and Rebel Stand. So those will be the other two books that we'll be talking about. But before we get to our book review, Luke, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Recording from a hotel room right now. I'm on a week away for work, so brought up my microphone and all that, and actually got stopped in security because of the microphone. They took the backpack over to, you know, where they check it and stuff,
right?
And I saw on the screen it did look pretty ridiculous looking, you know, that big Yeti microphone.
Yeah.
So they pulled that out and I was like, oh, it's for a podcast. Okay. I'm surprised the internet's been holding up this well.
Right on. Well, is there anything in Star Wars news that you've been kind of keeping an eye on?
I honestly don't think so.
Nothing new.
It's been kind of a dull month for that. You know, I feel like this month has went so fast. You know, I just started my master's and with the baby and all that, it's just time's flying.
Yeah, I gotcha. I was able to
what
finish.
About you?
I was able to finish Rebel Rising, which was a pretty cool book, and I posted a review of that book on the Coffee with Kenobi website. And it was pretty cool. Like I said last episode, it was dark and definitely seemed less of a young reader's and more of an adult audience or adult focused novel. But it was in the format, even the size and format of as far as like physical size of a young reader's book. But it was really cool. I really enjoyed reading it or listening to it. And it was cool to have, because we've been listening to older versions of the current series, that the A New Jedi Order series is kind of that old school recording on tape. This was good to have a quality recording to listen to. And that was cool to have still. The music is still the old catalog. I didn't hear any of the new music, but you know, I wonder when that's going to actually happen, when the new novels that we're getting that are coming on the market are going to have new soundtrack music in the background and things like that. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. But I've totally gotten addicted to the new like droid matching or whatever they, let me see. I should probably find exactly what the name is, since I spend the puzzle game, the Star Wars puzzle, like BB-8 Star Wars puzzle game. It's on the iPhone. Still doing the Star Wars card trader app and still looking for any missing Ahsoka cards that I don't have. But other than that, I've just been kind of just listening to the stuff that you and I are going to be talking about. So,
yeah, same here.
I know in a couple days, the very first live stream of a little bit of a playthrough, the City of Theed playthrough for Battlefront 2 is going to be coming out, or going to be live streamed here in a couple days from our recording date. By the time we actually do post, I bet it'll be pretty close to the 10th, I believe, is when they're going to be releasing that or streaming that. So we'll have our first look at the new Battlefront 2 game. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, just waiting for the movie to come out, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of downtime right now, it seems like. But
Yeah.
Sometimes you need a break, so it's good.
I agree. Well, I guess with that being said, why don't we go ahead and head over to our book review?
All right. Hey, everybody. So we're going to start our book review with Dark Journey, which is preceded by Star by Star, the book where Anakin died. And like always, I'll do my best. This month, I had to – I assisted the Young Life group by driving a van 6.5 hours and dropping kids off at the camp over at Oak Ridge. And then I drove back the same day. So it was, you know, at least – it was about – best case, it was 13 hours in the car. But I actually hit a two-hour-long traffic jam over by Palm Springs.
Oh, geez.
So it was about 15 hours of drive time, and I actually knocked out all three books in the one drive.
Wow.
So because of that, it was great. But at the same time, now I'm going through here, I'm like, which book was which? What happened? Because there was so much information, like, jumbled into one massive book. So I'm going to do my best here, and we'll see where we go.
Okay,
very so, basically, the Jedi Strike Team has just escaped Merkur and the Voxen threat. They stole the Kastar, which is Nomanor's ship, and they have Anakin's body, and they're jetting out of there, and they're kind of learning how to use the ship, I guess you could say.
Right.
And at the same time, we have the battle over Coruscant, just to kind of remind everybody. The Yuuzhan Vong have attacked, and Kip Duran's there, you know, he's back, everybody loves him, and that's kind of where we're at, you know, the Kastar gets to Coruscant, we have a little issue with how do they know that it's us, you know, the Jedi are kind of asking, how do they know it's us and they're not going to fire on us, and through Jaina's tricky flying, they kind of, that's what's funny, they figured out it was her, it's like, no, Yuuzhan Vong can fly like that.
And also Leia is able to sense her presence in the battle. Somehow she's able to, you know, through the Force, obviously, she's able to feel Jaina, but she doesn't know exactly where Jaina is, but she knows she's close. And then they do notice the flying and the quality of flying, and, oh, that must be Jaina. So,
and then they escape to the Hapes Cluster. That's our opening, quickly. Yeah. What do you got to talk about through this opening?
Well,
what's your rundown? What are your thoughts?
My thoughts.
Tell me.
I will tell you. First of all, I thought that the idea of a Jaina-centric book is cool, because eventually Jaina, you know, as we continue on, Jaina becomes one of my favorite characters. And I also thought that the idea of her kind of knowing how or learning how to fly Yuuzhan Vong's ship, she does kind of gain some Yuuzhan Vong ability as far as, like, you know, language and different things like that. And I know that Tahiri Vela is the one that is kind of like becomes less human and more she kind of assumes some of those Yuuzhan Vong abilities, but Jaina does as well. And the fact that she's able to communicate through Nomanor's communication villip, that she's able to communicate to Savan La, the War Master. I think that was, I thought that was a really cool, thing. And I like the fact that the whole time through, whenever she does communicate to the Yuuzhan Vong leadership through Nomanor ship, that's kind of like that's like a victory in itself. Like, we've got Nomanor, we've got his ship, we've got his way to communicate with you, his one, you know, one way communication with you. And it's kind of like a sticking it to the Yuuzhan Vong, and we know how to fly your ship this well, this awesome. So yeah. I like the beginning of the book. The idea of her trying to communicate that she and the strike force, she and the strike team, Lobaka and who else is on that ship? It's Lobaka,
Ganner Risode,
yep,
and Tenel Ka, Tahiri
Vela, yep. So it's a group of it's a group of basically the young Jedi Knights, which is a small six-part book, a book series that came out for little kids, and tells the story of these the young Jedi Knights: Tennel Kah, Lobaka, Tahiri Vela, Anakin, Jason. This is that group. That's super cool. I really like him, except for Lobaka, because it's just Wookiee noises. So to answer your question in 5 minutes or less, I really enjoyed the beginning of the book, so I thought it was cool.
Well, after that, we're at one of your favorite places, the Hapes Cluster.
Yeah.
Which you know more about, but you know, at this point we're kind of thrown back into, I guess, the after effects of what happened back at Fondor. Mm-hmm. Previously, Prince Isolder, he's had assassination attempts on him. Mm-hmm. Tenente Neal Jo is losing her will to live, so she's kind of all messed up and crazy almost.
Right.
T'Chum, she's got her own machinations and is looking for a replacement.
Right.
You know, she's got her own motives. So we're kind of thrown into this political battle there, I think.
Right.
I was kind of under the impression that, here we go with Leia, they're going to try to bring her in. But surprisingly, that wasn't the case.
No.
What do you think about the setup that we have here on Hapes Cluster?
Well, I think that the idea of, using the medium of writing kind of made it easy to try to, pull off or try to sell the idea that that Jaina could marry who's the king or the prince who
Isolder,
yeah,
Prince Isolder.
And Prince Isolder is old enough to be her father, I guess, like, because
yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, Prince Isolder was there was, I guess,
and him and Leia have like a thing or
him
something.
Him and Leia and I think that's either Tatooine Ghost or The Courtship of Princess Leia. That's the book, I think, where that was decided, where Han Solo got the girl. He got, he married Leia and all that kind of stuff. But now here is, it's kind of weird, but here's the daughter of those two, Jaina Solo, and they're trying to kind of match make this old guy with Jaina Solo. And so, because it's writing, you can kind of bridge the gap with your imagination, but it sounds kind of gross. But you're right in that Hapes.
How is it actually pronounced? Because
I've heard it.
Alexander Adams says Hapes.
Yeah, and then later on, the Hapes, it's pronounced by Jonathan Davis as Hapes, the Hapes Consortium.
Guess it's like the Sabaoth, Sabaoth, Cabaoth.
Yeah,
it's
same idea. I'm sure there's an official way to pronounce it, but when the Hapes kind of situation begins, so they find themselves probably because of Tennel Kah. I know it's because Tennel Kah is kind of part of royalty. She's a Jedi, mm-hmm. and she's on that ship. And so they decide, well, we'll run to the Hapes Consortium and we'll find safety there because Tennel Kah is on the ship. And they run into this, this attempt to make Jaina Solo kind of a warrior queen, warrior princess, which is cool, but a stretch. But at the same time, And I know you're going to be excited about talking about this, so I'll set it up so you can talk. At the same time, Baron Fell sends his son. His son is Jagged Fell and has been trained by the Chiss. He's a human, but he's been trained by the Chiss, and he's been under Chiss care. And so he's no force ability, but like this amazing pilot and very much and very brave and very chivalrous. And so Jagged Fell's father, Baron Fell, sends his son to kind of on a intelligence mission, go see, you know, basically go see. We know that the Yuuzhan Vong are kind of on their way to the Hapes Consortium or the Hapes Cluster. Go find out how to defeat the Yuuzhan Vong. And so Baron Fell is basically saying, you know, I'm sending my son to his death. It's a, you know, it's a suicide mission kind of deal. But Jagged Fell is like up to the task and pretty cool. So you, I know I'll let you go for it. As far as Jagged Fell as a character, what do you feel about him as a character?
I mean, I thought it was pretty cool. At the beginning, I kind of, I don't remember where he came from because I was driving. So sometimes in and out, I was like, what, where's he?
Yeah.
But, I thought it was interesting how they had the Han Solo, scene where he was kind of set up to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
And Jag Fell is there, kind of saves him. And he's thrown into this mix of, hey, you need to go find Jaina and give her this news and all this. Now he's thrown into it. And basically him and Jaina realize, or she realizes, that they have like a connection.
Right.
So I thought that was really cool. And she's not sure why, but she has the Force dream about him and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked his character. I mean, we'll go into the later parts of the book in a minute, but I mean, he's, as you would expect that character to be, you know, he's kind of Chiss Imperial. I guess what would, I don't know the word, but
I kind of see,
when, I don't know,
when I see his name or hear his name, I kind of think of like, kind of a Top Gun pilot yeah. kind of character. Is that lame? That maybe it's
no.
I think of Val Kilmer's character, but like,
no,
like maybe,
maybe he's more reserved, you know.
Yeah.
He's,
yeah, you're right,
calm, cool, collected.
So is he? I don't know. He's a pilot, so
you know. Thrawn pilot, I guess. I don't
yeah.
know. He's
yeah,
he's smooth.
Yeah, that's cool. That's all right. I'll take smooth.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's cool. He's a cool character, and
I don't know who he is on Top Gun. A lot of those guys were ridiculous. Yeah,
but I see him as that like kind of hotshot pilot, like.
But he wasn't playing volleyball.
Yeah, that's true.
In his jeans.
Yeah, in his jeans. Who does that?
But yeah, he kind of is a hotshot pilot. But he's also, I like how he's able to be have humility as well.
Yeah,
you know, he's,
oh, there's a there's a servant
cocky.
A servantness to him. Is there a serviceness mm-hmm. or servant to him, which is pretty admirable and cool. Yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm correct.
At the same time, though, I thought it was cool where Jaina is starting to understand the Kastar, and she basically gets in contact with Savon Law and is almost mocking him.
Yeah.
By calling the ship the Trickster, you know, and because of Yun Harla, who's the god that Savon Law worships, and it's the Trickster. So she's kind of like mocking him,
mm-hmm.
and that's where we start to get into that. Oh, what were they calling her? The queen or the goddess or something?
The goddess, yeah.
The goddess, that's what it was, yeah. So, I mean, I thought that was pretty cool as well.
Yeah.
Especially when she had that Trickster fly. I don't remember the whole scenario, but she basically literally tricked them
right.
with their ship. And they're like, holy crap, maybe she is a goddess.
Yeah. This is the same point, or maybe the first point where we realize how... up until this very moment that you're talking about, there, we know that the Yuuzhan Vong values twins, that it's a rarity among the Yuuzhan Vong culture, but we don't know why. And I know in this book is when it's finally revealed that there's a sacrifice that's supposed to be made, and maybe they've talked about a sacrifice before, but they don't really let you know, or I don't remember. I'm down to being corrected here, Luke, but
mm-hmm.
but the reason that they hold twins in such high esteem is because the sacrifice is the two twins fight, and the one that loses is the sacrifice to this, you know, to this god or whatever. And so it's that's why they already have Jacen Solo. He's already in captivity. They've killed Anakin, and they're looking for the twin because they want to make this sacrifice to the king or to their god. And then there's the whole idea of maybe she is deity. Maybe she is the embodiment of, is it Yang Harla? Is that the mm-hmm. name of the goddess.
Yeah, Yunhala.
Yeah, that she's supposed
Yunhala, or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, so.
But I think it all backfires on him, too. That's the best part.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember if it's this book or the other book, but later they start to, like, realize, or it's mentioned, there's twins all over this galaxy.
Yeah.
You know? And they've been trying to capture her, and it's like she's destroying them.
And that is that's the failure, not of them, or the misunderstanding.
There's Namor's failure,
yeah,
right?
It's his failure, right? Because they...
Again, yeah, the guy sucks.
Yeah, he does. He fails all the time. And that's actually mentioned in the second book that we'll talk about. It's like, you know, Namor is supposed to be this, like, kick butt, like, bad guy and stuff, but... You know, or I guess officially, or, you know, more technical term, an antagonist, but he fails all the time. Like, he spends the whole time that we know him failing. And part of that failure is this misunderstanding of the rarity of twins. Like, twins happen all the time in human society. So it's not really that special, and so they're searching after something that isn't really that valuable. It's not as valuable as they think it is. It's not like as rare as a Yuuzhan Vong society, and so they've been searching for Jaina Solo, kind of a wild goose chase all this time. Thankfully Jaina's up to the task because she's such an awesome warrior, but it's definitely Namor's failure. Because he misunderstands.
Would you think about Kip Duran becoming Jaina's master? Because that was right around this point too.
Yeah.
I mean, did you like it, or were you against it, or are you indifferent?
I guess I was indifferent. I didn't feel maybe because I can't tell you what I felt originally, like way 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 back in the day, mm-hmm. when I first. Listen to the books on cassette from the library or whatever. But maybe because I already knew it wasn't going to really mean.
Hey, mean that spoiler.
I don't know. I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember. I mean, and I, like, honestly, I don't remember if it really matters at all.
Yeah.
And so
I was surprised.
Were you?
How his character is not so much of a jerk anymore, I guess.
Okay, so we're trying.
He almost is turned into like an actual legit character, not some guy that wants to ruin everything every 10 seconds. I guess it was kind of just out of nowhere. All of a sudden, now he's grown up. I don't know.
Well, if there's a character that's been given so many second chances, third, fourth, fifth, 20 chances to redeem himself.
Well, he went and go back to Aes Jedi. He destroyed a whole planet, didn't he? Wasn't he the guy that stole that ship and blew up everything? I'm like, really?
Yeah. How's he still a Jedi? How's he still? Yeah, it is. I don't know. That's all I have to say about that. That's all I have to say about that.
Yep. Moving on.
Moving on. So, should we?
We're blowing through this book, but...
Yeah. Okay, so because of the format that we're listening, you know, at whatever, an eight-hour book, if you listen to it and it's normal... If there was a version that was unabridged, this abridged version is 3 hours and some change. And so in there, it's kind of just kind of thrown in for... It seems like 45 seconds of dialogue or 45 seconds of narrative is Anakin Solo's funeral.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, like a funeral pyre kind of situation. And the amount of time they spend on it is about the amount of time I just spent on it. It was so fast. And then, boom, on to another battle somewhere, you know. So mm-hmm. So that happens, and it's a lot less. I'm sure if we read the book, it would be a lot more emotional and a lot different. But it's not as we listen to it.
To be honest, this book, one reason why I'm blown through too, it didn't grip me as much as what we're about to talk about in the next two.
Really? Okay.
Those felt like 100 more things happened. This, okay. I felt like there was more setup going on or something.
Okay.
We're trying to develop Jaina as this character. She has a little brush with the dark side.
Yeah.
We're introduced to Jagged Fell. They have a little dream thing, you know. Uh-huh. And we're setting up more of the Hapi stuff. You know, Tenennial Joe dies from poisoning.
Right.
Tachum is kind of in trouble because of it. I thought it was pretty cool how Jag Fell was put in command by Tenel Ka.
Yes.
For that battle. I thought that was really cool.
And there was there was tension between Tenel Ka and Jaina Solo, and that disappeared as soon as Tenel Ka became you know,
queen.
She's the queen mother now. You know, instantly Jagatfell is put in charge of what's his official title of colonel. So that was really cool, and given charge of the Hapes, you know, a couple of Hapes squads of fighters. So I mean, that was really cool, just because we dig Jagatfell because he's cool.
And another La is killed when he commits suicide, but Kali La, mm-hmm. you know, another Savang La's kin or whatever's
right.
cousins, or the guy is the biggest family in the world because every book we have one of them.
Yeah.
But so we're down another Yuuzhan Vong.
Yeah. But thankfully, there's 5, 6, 7 more books full of them.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. The next book. And
yeah. So
I'm sorry we rushed through it.
Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts?
I do. I really like this book. I like the fact that that it showed Jaina. Jaina was basically given the opportunity to have the throne of. I mean, yeah, it was manipulation, but she was at least given the opportunity to be royalty in the Hapes family or Hapes cluster, and denied it and chose to be a warrior instead, a pilot. That she's a pilot. She's a Jedi first, which was really cool. It kept the door open for a future with Jagatfell instead of Isolder, and it mm-hmm. got rid of that whole Isolder kind of creepy Isolder 60-year-old man, you know, the kind of weird 50-year-old man with the, you know,
19-year-old, however old she is.
Yeah. And I do like Jaina Solo as a character, and so that I thought that was pretty awesome. That it was a cool book. I will say now before we go on to the other two that this was my favorite out of the three.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, and it's that way. I think maybe because I do like the characters, at least on the rebellion side, or at least on the Republic side. We shouldn't call it rebellion here, but the Republic side. I like all of those characters with the exception of Kip Duran. Even Ganna Riso, all those characters, I think they're cool. And one of the things as this book was going along, just as we close the review on this book, but one of the things that I had mentioned in the past is that the need to to kill Chewie was because he was always standing in the room, but you didn't hear from him. And when you did, you couldn't really get any dialogue from him because it's just grunting and growling and he's speaking Shriwook. And so, so you'd have, huge chunks of dialogue and conversation happening in the room. And then you'd have like a little like hint or a little like token, little thing to remind you that Chewie's in the room, and Chewie grunted, you know, happily or whatever, and then they continued mm-hmm. on with the narrative. I felt like that was one of the reasons that they got rid of Chewbacca, and they had to kill him as a character. He was expendable because he was a liability in storytelling. But now here we have Lobaka is back in the mix, and Lobaka is a Jedi and a Wookiee, and still the same dilemma is there. And then, Lobaka came from the back of the ship and then left, it's like, okay, we know Lobaka's on the ship, but it's just kind of one of those deals. But I just was thinking about that, like, okay, they killed off Chewie, and then they bring in another, and I know where he came from. I know he came from previous books. And so this group of friends and kids are growing up together, and they're going to be the next generation. And so that's why it's so important that they continue to keep this group together. And that's another reason that I really like the book is I really like this group of characters, and they this group of characters ends up to be kind of the foundation of the post Big Five. Mm-hmm. Jaina, Jason, you know, Tenel Ka, Tahiri Vela, all of those, you know, even Lobaka, all of these characters become sort of the foundation of the next generation. And I think, I know that they would have carried the torch way past Luke and Leia and Han Solo in the Legends storyline. And they do kind of carry on that torch or that tradition or whatever. The storyline follows them and becomes less and less about the Big Five. So I don't know. I like this book. I thought it was pretty cool. So
yeah.
Do you want to, why don't we take a break before we head on to the final duology?
All right, let's do it. All right. So starting with Enemy Lines 1, these are going to kind of blend into one conversation since Rebel Dream ended literally at the beginning of Rebel Stand. It pretty much carried over. So we're given the beginning of this book where I'm just straight reading off Wikipedia to help us both out.
Yeah.
Wedge Antilles, you know, he's in command of Fleet Group 3, and they withdraw from Coruscant, you know, because it's chaos there. Mm-hmm. And they go to Borlaeus, which is controlled by Yuuzhan Vong. And they basically attempt to retake the planet. They have all the heroes with them. Luke, Mara, Corrin, Rogue Squadron, Wild Knights, Saba 17, and Star Destroyer Mon Mothma. And they basically blow through the defenses. And Lando sends his YVH droids down to the planet to take it over. They basically destroy the enemy Rakamat. And the planet's secured. And then they basically take over the planet and create their own base, which is pretty cool. They, you know, they bring in the fight back to them. They're creating a stronghold, and we're rebuilding. At the same time, in the Yuuzhan Vong side, we have Vicky Shesh, but mm-hmm. she's so annoying, and I just wish she would leave, which I can't wait for.
So Vicky Shesh is still that, like...
yeah, she's a Kuwaiti senator tried to basically capture Ben, and, you know, she's annoying. Another character. Annoying to me, at least. I don't know. Right, maybe somebody out there is a huge Vicky Shesh fan, has shirts and cardboard stand-ups. I don't know.
Yeah, they cosplay as Vicky Shesh.
Yes.
I don't know if I've ever... Yeah.
0% of people would know who that is, you know. Who are you?
I have no idea. What about the Lysenko? That's a superstar destroyer too.
That's kind of cool. How that shows up, basically, which is an interesting conversation too. Which I don't know if we want to jump into it, but the Consular Pwo and his little cronies, their deal that they make with Wedge. I mean, that's a whole conversation we can have too. Before we jump into that in Lusanka, mm-hmm. what do you think about the beginning of this book and how they take over Borlaeus and Vicky Shesh is almost put to death and tricks Savan. Well, she doesn't. She technically tricks him, but it ends up being true in a way.
Right.
Savan La and his Armin plan being sabotaged.
And is it Savan La or is it Savan La's?
It's his Armin plan, okay. And it's basically like it keeps deteriorating, and the Shapers are telling him it can't be fixed. And yeah,
I thought I don't know, shades of Empire or Return of the Jedi when they're making the plans for, you know, when they're making the plans to take down the second Death Star. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of that. It kind of had that kind of feel to it. Big battles and things, you know, I thought that was cool. That's kind of what I remember from as far as emotion.
The triangle ships.
Yeah. You know, the idea of, you know, the Yuuzhan Vong battle droids that Lando has built. I think those are cool. Those continue to kind of live through the timeline, even continuing on through the timeline. But you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. I heard the sound of what sounded like maybe you dropping. So I don't think I had any emotions or feelings beyond that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool that we're kind of bringing the fight back, and I feel like it's staging the second round, or to me, the second wave of this book series. That's okay. How I was perceiving it. Because as well, I said before, I don't know what happens past any of these books we've read.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool for me, I guess. So to me, it seems like, you know, we've been getting our butts kicked this whole time, and now we're building up. We're trying, and let's go into this next part, and then I'll make my point of what I'm about to say.
Okay.
The counselor Puo shows up. He took over after Borsk Phalia is killed, and he's like claiming the chief of state role. And him and Wedge kind of work out a deal. Do you want to talk about that, or do you want me to?
Yeah, you can talk. You keep going, because I'm like, oh yeah.
So they work out a deal basically where. So Puo wants Wedge to basically be the rear guard defense, and he wants to start settling Huzhan Bong. But Wedge says, all right, fine, but I want the Lusaka, and I want free reign over all the forces close to here, because Puo thinks it's going to be like a final battle and they're all going to die, you know, whatever. But Wedge, out of this, creates like a little resistance cell, which I remember that conversation in the book, and I thought it was pretty cool. Basically like saying, you know, we fought differently as rebels and we are now, remember that?
Yes.
You remember that speech?
Absolutely.
I thought that was cool. And I was almost thinking like Force Awakens talk. Now we got this resistance. They're talking about making resistance cells with booster Taric all over. And they're going to bring the fight back to Yuuzhan Vong the same way they did as rebels, not as New Republic.
Right.
And I thought that was so cool. It was like this inspirational speech by Wedge of, you know, we're going to bring the fight back to him.
I do.
We got a Super Star Destroyer now. We got this. We're going to do. We got Rogue Squadron. We got the Wild Knights. We got the Twin Suns. We got these, you know, special forces. I don't know. I thought that was really cool.
And the are you in, are you out kind of conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, anybody, don't let anybody know. We got to get rid of these spies. This is like.
It's treason from here on out.
Round table. You know?
Yeah. I do recall that now that you have explained it to me again and jogged my memory. And I did have that same emotion, like, yeah, let's stick it to them. Cause it's true. I mean, what they're best at is being rebels. And even though at this point, and correct me if I'm wrong, Coruscant hasn't been sacked, has it? I mean, this was kind of a pushback. This is a retaliation.
It's pretty much been taken over at this point. They abandoned Coruscant, and it's because that's shortly later into this book we get the word from those people from Coruscant that, hey, they're doing something in the atmosphere. It's falling apart, and Luke has his dark visions.
Okay. All right. So I do know as the story goes along that they actually – and when we get there, I'll probably be a little bit more. It'll be clear why I'm thinking that it hasn't been taken yet. But it does sound like it's on its way. So, yeah, I agree. And as we Wedge's character, he does get to a place where he's like he wants to retire quietly, but. I think because of fandom, because Wedge is such a famous or such a well-loved, well-liked character, that he always gets brought back into the battle and back into the story, and it's you know, it's cool. That's what we expect Wedge to do. I mean, he's survived the Battle of Yavin. He survived the second Death Star. He's just awesome in that way. And so, yep, I'm with you. On that, yeah. That conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. He's building this fleet up, you know, and then we have we're kind of introduced to the Maw, I think, here. Isn't this the first time we're introduced to it? The Jedi survivors are being taken there for safety. It wasn't really mentioned much in the audiobook, but talking to a friend of mine who's going through this series, he had mentioned it. And when I was going through researching, you know, the book again, make sure I remembered everything, it was in there. I'm like, well, that was left out of the audiobook, but
The Maw conversation. Let me double check here with I'm going to check just the timeline, because I do know that the Maw is mentioned quite a bit in...
Well, no, isn't it mentioned in Rogue Squadron series?
Yes, but more importantly mentioned in the Black Fleet
crisis. Well, I guess this is the first time in this series, maybe, then. Or
yeah.
And they're taking the Jedi there.
Yeah.
With the loss of Chaz's fleet, though, Savang Law is he's mad because he lost a fleet here. So he consults his father, Chulking La. He's a famous tactician. So he's sent, which I don't know why he just doesn't go himself. You know, he calls his dad, and his dad goes there and takes a massive fleet to Borlais, which is kind of confusing. I don't know. It is interesting. But at the same time, Luke gets his dark visions of Coruscant, and they start planning the journey there. I don't know anything about Wraith Squadron. I don't know if they're mentioned before.
And that's about halfway through, I want to say, about halfway through the Rogue Squadron series, they put together what's called the Wraith Squadron. And the Wraith Squadron are basically, they're not just pilots. They're like special ops kind of, warriors, special ops soldiers that not only are amazing pilots, but they have the ability to carry out tactical, I don't know what the term is, but tactical missions, like on the ground. And you know, the Wraith stories have different, you know, different situations that they're put in, where they have to go find a MacGuffin here or save a person there. But so they're not just pilots. They're pilots, but they're also trained special ops soldiers as well. So
cool plot point coming up right now after. So Jaina, Kip, and Jagfell arrive from Hapes. Luke's going to leave, so he gives command of the Twin Sun Squadron to Jaina.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty cool. And Jag and Kip joined the squadron. I mean, what did you think about that?
Under her command.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool. Even, and then there's the dynamic. I know there's a dynamic of now it's weird, but here's Jaina, who is in command of Wraith Squadron, but her master is, you know, and that's a direct order, you know, there's a conflict of interest, or you know, especially as we talk about the end, or you know, the end of this battle, or the end of, you know, this particular fight, where Jaina has to make a judgment call, and it's not a judgment call whether to follow orders or not, but it's a judgment call whether to it's a moral dilemma. Either I go and I make this decision and disobey my master, but who is also my subordinate, because I'm in charge of this fleet and it's my responsibility to make sure everyone's safe. But I thought it was really cool, and I thought it was a unique position to put Jaina in, and I thought it created really good tension.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to like her a lot too, and yeah. I thought it's cool starting to see her go into this leadership role and kind of show her skills off. We're also introduced to the Star Lancer project, which is a cool little strategy by Wedge, the fake super weapon that freaks the Yuuzhan Vong out.
Right now, so the Yuuzhan Vong are aware. They know about this, you know, the stories from the past. They know about, you know, the Star Killer, or the, you know, what they call the, is that System Killer? Sorry, their name for
the Star, the one they mentioned how they've blown up stars and stuff.
Yeah, but we know it as the Death Star. But they kind of know about history of how they, the Republic has this ability, or the Republic or the Empire or whatever. But this group of people has the ability to destroy stars, and that's what they think. The Yuuzhan Vong think that this thing like you said, it is fake, and Wedge is like, we're gonna sell it to him like it's real. And so that becomes kind of a,
after people thought it was, I remember when he tells them later that
That's
like so secretive.
Which was, you know, which is necessary to pull off that. Because there's real, I don't know, optimism and real fear in the Yuuzhan Vong's eyes. Like, this is a thing that could put us to, this could put us to ruin if we don't. Mm-hmm. So it was a trap, or it wasn't really a trap, but it was definitely a smokescreen. And it was pretty awesome. It was pretty cool. So
what did you think of that scene where basically the fleet comes in and they're caught off guard when they're doing their little test, and Jagfell kind of sacrifices himself to save everybody, but Jaina refuses to go back and leave them, and her and Kip kind of disobey Wedge and save them.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. And this is the scene that I'm talking about, where it's like, mm-hmm. you know, where Jaina is forced to disobey a command. Actually I got the impression, that Kip was like, no,
He was at the beginning, but he still helped her because it's like
that's his Padawan.
He was telling her, no, we got to go back. But yeah, he said he would stay with her.
Okay. So that's the impression that I got as well. So
because do you remember, it was pretty sweet. He like used his force ability to flip around the Dovin Basel and destroy the ship. Like the black hole, like sucked the ship in.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
It was cool.
I was like, why haven't you been doing that before?
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah. Like you said before, it's like, cool, Kip has shown up. Where have you been? but I do. I loved that scene. I loved the idea of, I love where that ended up as far as what that led to. Are we
the love interest?
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about it. Yeah. So I love that it ended up being Jagged Fell was like, okay, this girl is like, because it's been hinted to, you know, it was hinted
that they had a connection. Yeah,
that there was a, not just a connection, but that when we first meet Jagged Fell in Dark Journey, he's asking his father, which, you know, oh, one of the Solo kids died. Which one was it? Or one of them's been taken captive. Which one was it? And his dad noticed right away that he was relieved to see that Jaina was still good, that she was still alive and she was safe. And he's like, okay. And his dad's like, oh, okay. Well, I see what's going on here. So anyway, I love the fact that, that it wasn't him saving her. It was her saving him. And so that's really cool. You know, like that. And that the fruit of that, that dilemma, or that, you know, that she went in, that he was the damsel in distress, or whatever. What is a dude damsel? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but he was
dude
a damsel
in distress.
Yeah, and she showed up, and she was large and in charge, and saved him, and was refused to leave him behind, and that was cool. And the fact mm-hmm. that he put himself there in the first place, like that's Jagged Fell's character, sacrificial, putting others before others' needs before his own. And that's why I think you and I are really starting to dig on the Jagged Fell character, because he's cool.
Well, I guess the last few things we get to talk about, the Wraith Squadron with Luke, Mara, Tahiri dropped off at Coruscant, mm-hmm. which, you know, I guess I wasn't too interested in that story, and that's okay. Mainly what our next book is about.
Yeah.
And then the other scene, we have a massive assault from the Yuuzhan Vong to attack this facility that supposedly is carrying this super weapon, mm-hmm. you know, the Starlancer project. And basically the Lusanka does a massive orbital bombardment on these troops, which is another point where Chul King La is angry at the end of the book, I remember, because he's like, in all of Nomanor's recon, he never showed that these triangle ships could do this.
Right.
He never explained it. You know, he missed this, and we just got destroyed. So he withdraws his forces, and it's really like the first big New Republic victory to me, which is like the turning point. I don't know if it really is a turning point, but it felt like it to me, because I know we're running down on books. So
yeah.
What do you got about those two?
It's not it's crazy because, I mean, it feels like a turning point. I don't know if it's giving away. I feel like this battle, this war between the Yuuzhan Vong and the Republic is like endless, or there's just no end in sight. And I don't know previously if the Yuuzhan Vong just kind of, it becomes a war of attrition, or just by numbers and persistence, when, because the reason that they're even, the reason the Yuuzhan Vong are even in this system and in this galaxy is because they're going to take this galaxy and they use up all the resources and then move on to the next one. And that's how they survive. And so I'm assuming that the mentality is it's just a siege, just a constant bombardment, a constant siege to make your way into the core of a galaxy, take the galaxy, use it up for all its resources and move on to the next. So the reason that I believe that the New Jedi Order series is so, it's not very popular is because you just feel so hopeless so much. So many times it's like, this is like you were saying, yes, they did push back. Yes, they did take Borlaeus back. Yes, they did have a victory, but they lost Coruscant. They, this is a small victory. Yeah. You know, they won a battle, but they're still losing the war in the hugest way. Mm-hmm. And they still have no, it took Wedge and his like brilliant, like general or brilliant, like military mind to get just a small victory. And that amount of helplessness, I think, caused people to be like, dude, they're never going to get out of this ever. And so, or this is going to last forever. It's never going to end. And, you know, I'm out, you know, there's 5 books left and I just don't feel, I think to the authors, all the authors as a whole, or to the editor's best interest to give some glimmer of hope. And this was it, but it's still, you know, as we continue on, it's still a small victory. I feel like, I don't know. I don't remember, honestly, don't remember the Force Heretic trilogy very well. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel, I guess at this point, it is what it is. It's a victory. We should feel this glimmer of hope. And so far, it's just been like downer, you know, the whole time is what it feels like. They're loss after loss after loss. We get a glimmer of hope. They get Borlaeus back. But I don't, even to the end, I think that I wish I could tell you more at this point. Mm. But I don't feel like, I don't remember feeling like, oh, Borlaeus, they have Borlaeus. And so like, that's a victory and yay, you know, it's all right now. It's okay now. So, you know, wherever Borlaeus is on the map of the galaxy, like think about the things that they've lost. They've lost, you know, all the outer rim stuff. They've lost, you know, a huge chunk all the way into the core. They've lost so many places that to get Borlaeus, I don't even know what happens in the past on Borlaeus. Do you? I mean, why was Borlaeus so, I don't remember why it was such a strategic, or why it was, maybe it was a victory that they thought they could win. And that was a small victory is better than no victory at all. But I don't know. That's all I have to say about that as well. So,
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
So, picking up like literally immediately, we're now in book 2 of that series. Uh-huh. Rebel Stand. There's only a few things that honestly happen, and I feel like out of that 4.5-hour book, we can probably dump about 3 hours because they're honestly. I mean, we all read it. Luke, Mara, Tahiri, and Rey Squadron just running around Coruscant, running into insurgents, and running from Yuuzhan Vong. I mean, let's be honest. That's what it was. And they're hearing about this Lord Nyax's tale.
Yeah.
You know, this guy, and he's glowing. And let's just do this story alone. Let's just not even go through the book. Let's do the Nyax Coruscant story first. So they're running around trying to figure out what's going on in Coruscant. And they go into this scientific lab, and they find out that some guy that's like 3 meters tall broke out, and he's like super biotic Jedi, you know, dark Jedi. I feel like that was a huge opportunity lost. I mean, I just want to hear what you got to say here before I.
All right. So honestly, it felt like Inspector Gadget, bad guy of the week. That's what it felt like, you know.
Yeah.
I'll get you, Gadget.
That's how it was like. That's how it felt. It felt
they needed a bad guy, so they made up someone.
Yeah, and I don't think. I mean, maybe there are some minor things, but are we any at the end of this book? Like, okay, at the end of the first book of this duology, we're like, okay, Jaina, Jag, they're a thing now. We do a small victory. We have a small victory. We have Borlaeus. Wedge has created, like, okay, we have the Wraith Squadron. We have that. Just finish right there. We're good. Mm-hmm. We don't have anything. I feel not a lot of, I don't know, value from the second book in this series.
The only value, I think, is stuff they could have thrown back into the first book. The first book is only 304 pages. If you add another 100 pages, make a 400-page book, and add all the other Borlaeus stuff, you're good.
Yeah.
The Coruscant thing was, like what you said, nothing really happened. And I honestly feel like it's a missed opportunity because it says this book came out in 2002. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure. I thought maybe it was 2005. They're talking about this scientific lab on Coruscant where a guy broke out. There's broken droids everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wow, this would be really cool if they're in the lab where Darth Vader was created.
Oh, I see what you're saying now, yeah.
This could be really cool. Obviously, it's not Darth Vader there, but if Luke was literally in the lab where his father turned into Darth Vader. And that's where I felt like this is the biggest missed opportunity ever. Obviously, this is 3 years before Revenge of the Sith came out, which, you know, that's they wouldn't have known how that scene was going to play out.
Right.
But man, I was just thinking, because they were talking, yeah, it's under Coruscant. Well, I'm like, well, that's a little different than in the movie, but maybe this still is. It's a tall guy, you know, all this stuff. And then they say it's this Lord Nax, Eric Ismarin guy. And I'm like, well, that was a downer. You know, that could have been so cool for Luke and Mara to see that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my thing. And that. It was such a joke. Like, yeah. He's flying around after he got it into that Force Nexus, and he's got like lightsabers coming out of his elbows, and he's able to control minds like Mara and Luke. And I understand, I don't know, even Sabine, and it was just ridiculous to me. Like, we got to kill him before we can leave. We can't let this guy stay here. He'll control the whole galaxy.
No, just leave him.
I'm like,
you can just leave. Coruscant.
Do you have anything left on this? I mean,
no, I don't. Maybe
the only other thing is Vicky Shesh, maybe, and her dying.
Yeah. Maybe Tahiri Vela. Like, I mean, she has developed this Yuuzhan Vong ability. Now, she always spoke the language, and because she was taken captive and tortured by the Yuuzhan Vong, she's been able to actually, she's acquired the ability to make herself invisible. And that's one of the traits of the Yuuzhan Vong, is they're able to, they're kind of a blank spot in the Force. They're not detectable in the Force. And so now Tahiri Vela can do that, which is really cool for her character because of the darkness that she is continuing to plummet into. As far as the loss of Anakin, her and Anakin were very close, and and you know, even a love interest there. And since the loss of Anakin, Tahiri Vela is plummeting into like this dark place, and I can almost see her kind of looking through, you know, the top of her eyes, through her eyebrows, and just slowly just going crazy. And the last thing that she needs in her well-being is to be able to just disappear in the Force. But the coolest thing for us as readers in the development of this character is the fact that she can now disappear into the Force. And that's pretty
awesome. Building up. Yeah, she's building up into more of a... not a kid anymore. She's one of the top tier, it seems like.
But it's not with... She's not developing into that powerhouse as a... in a light way. It's in a dark way. And I don't recall. I know like kind of an overarching, I have an overarching idea of what happens, with Tahiri Vela as a character, but this whole, thing where, each author that inherits the Tahiri Vela character, and that carries on the story, mentions Tahiri Vela, and the authors are using different characters to glance over to Tahiri, and they're like she's like this broken arrow, like unstable kind of person, ready to snap because of the loss, that she is not dealing with the loss of Anakin very well at all, and so far she's been able to stay kind of on the light side. But the idea of her being able to disappear in the Force is not good for her as a character, but it's pretty awesome for us because it's a pretty awesome amount of tension. But
so the last part in this book, in the last main section, which they could have just thrown into the last book, the last, so I guess I said last, like how many times in the last three sentences, Borlaeus' final battle. We have the Lusankya, which is, I thought was pretty cool how they outfitted it, you know, as Operation Emperor's Spear is what they called it. And they're basically using it as a trick to go after Domain Hall's warship, which I thought was genius and sweet. And not only that, but how they used that missile to pretend that it was Jaina, to kill Charat Kral, which... was pretty cool in itself. And I mean, what do you think about the Emperor's Spear thing? I thought I knew what was going to happen the second I mean, I obviously, because of that, I was thinking of why am I drawing a blank here? What was the movie that literally just came out? Rogue One.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I guess I'm not
a Star Wars fan. I'm kicked off the show.
No.
But that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of, you know, the Hammerhead ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this thing is literally a spear that they mounted, and it just drives straight through the Yuuzhan Vong ship. And I thought it was cool how they went into detail of how the ship, because it's living, died.
Yeah.
You know, it was like just they detailed it. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I guess we should say that, you know, Aaron Alston is no longer with us, and to have this kind of like, you know, I don't know how much of these books are assignments given to them, but it's cool to have such cool story. And you're right, it is pretty cool. But and you're right that it could have been like the last 50 pages of the first book and skip all that stuff on Coruscant with Lord Nyx and all that other stuff. You know, having
cool ending though, another victory. You know, they took out literally a massive world ship.
Yeah, there's more, but they took. So again, it's a small victory, and again, it's under Wedge's his own machinations, or Wedge's creativity and awesomeness. But you know, at the same time, it is a small victory, and for now, where we leave it, it's like, oh, cool, we'll leave it there for the next book, which we'll talk about, which is, while all of this stuff is going on, Jason Solo is somewhere and experiencing what he's experiencing. So you know, that I think that that's where we'll, so I think I have this suspicion, and I have a vague memory that we kind of leave this storyline for a little bit and kind of find out what's been going on with Jason, because Jason's just been mentioned, that he's in captivity, he's not dead, and Leia says, you know, I can still feel him, he's still alive, he's still with us, so we know that Jason is alive, but they've kind of taken a break from that particular part of the storyline to kind of give you an overarching idea of what's happening with the Republic in their war versus the Yuuzhan Vong. But meanwhile, Jason Solo has been going through stuff. So that'll be what we talk about next month. But so are you saying that book?
Book two is my favorite.
Your favorite? Okay. Yeah. So you want to give an idea or give us the reason or what really sold you on book two here?
For me, is I like the Jagfell and Jaina thing as much as you do, and okay, I like them as characters. As much as the first book was about them, I thought the second book was as well.
Okay.
Because it was her getting her squadron, kind of showing what kind of commander she's going to be. And I felt like I liked how, as much as I don't like the New Republic and, you know, the rebellion, I thought it was cool how they're creating their stand here. This is where they're going to start fighting back and bringing it to the Yuuzhan Vong.
Okay.
So that's why I liked it. Book three, I mean, a lot of potential. Just swing and a miss. It'll be forgotten.
Yeah.
And you said book one was yours?
Yeah, book one was mine. And I think book one was mine because of the rest of the story and how well those young Jedi Knights are represented and what a big part of the story in the future that all of those characters are. And so that's why, I mean, you just add Jason to that and you have, you have a majority of those characters all through the Fate of the Jedi series, which is the final series, but also all through Legacy of the Force and, you know, all the things that we will experience in the next couple of years on Legends Library. And so that's why, going through the series for the first time or not knowing the rest of the storyline, I probably would be with you because of some of the really cool scenes and, you know, just wedges like, we can take them out kind of, you know, we can take these guys down. Let's go be rebels, you know, and we have hope and rebellions are built on hope. That's not what he said. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Rebellions are built on hope. So, I'm sorry. That was from the movie Rogue One.
Is that what it was called?
Yeah, Rogue One. That was Jyn Erso. Not to be confused with Qui-Gon Jinn, but we talked about that last episode. Why are they naming everything the same? Everybody has the same name.
Star Wars.
I like book one. Uh-huh. You like book two.
Nobody likes book three.
Nobody likes book three. So. Okay, so
well, next month we got Traitor.
Yeah, we got Traitor. It's written
Destiny's
by Matthew Stover, which I think majority of people think that Matthew Stover and his he wrote the novelization of Revenge of the Sith, if I'm not mistaken. That's correct, isn't it?
Revenge. I know he's wrote a decent amount of them.
Yeah. And then he also wrote, I should double check. Let me double check that. But he also wrote
after that
the story of Darth Vader, how Darth Vader became Darth Vader. Dark Lord of the Sith. I think that was him too. I'm looking through my book right now.
I'm showing Shatterpoint as well. Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
Oh, Shadows of Mendor. What a great one.
Yes, I know that wasn't as good. And then I want to say, well, I wonder who wrote. Okay, so Revenge of the Sith, and I think he did a really awesome job with Revenge of the Sith. Shatterpoint. Yep, I thought, who was it? I guess I've forgotten who wrote the Darth Vader, Dark Lord of the Sith. It was a sequel to Revenge of the Sith.
That wasn't James Luceno?
That's who it was. Yep. Okay. Yep. We got it all. We got it all straight. So we have Traitor by Matthew Stover. Okay. You are correct, sir. Yes. And then you were about to say
Destiny's Way by Walter John Williams.
Yes.
So we're just going to do two books next month because of the Force Heretic series is three books.
Right.
And I don't think anybody wants to do five books.
Correct.
Or split the trilogy up.
Yeah, I agree. So so it'll just be two books. You kind of we'll kind of get through the two books, and it's kind of like a month off a little bit because it's only two books. Maybe I'll read one of these. You don't know. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll just read one of these.
You won't. Especially now that we got Jonathan Davis' introduction.
We didn't talk about that, but we should just a little bit. The fact that book three this month, as much as the book did stink, the narrator was Jonathan Davis. And, oh, man, what a breath of fresh air. Like, okay.
Not that Alexander Adams did a terrible job, because I actually didn't mind him as I got used to him. But Jonathan Davis is a whole nother, you know, we're used to him from the new books, and he brings a great quality to it.
Okay, so Alexander Adams' story. He not only my favorite book that he narrates, Star Wars book that he narrates, is Shadowhunter, Darth Maul Shadowhunter. Yeah, but he also was one of the voices that they used in the Old Republic video games, like the Xbox Old Republic video games. So he was actually one of the characters. One of the characters, and I think I want to say it was I can't remember which character it was, but I want to say it was HK. I don't know, I can't say for sure, but it was in the introduction of HK, the HK droid, the assassin droid or whatever. Pretty crazy, huh? That the small Star Wars world that they kind of had a cross media kind of thing going on, but we are now in Jonathan Davis territory, which is cool. So it makes it a lot easier to listen to. So yes, I probably won't read it. I'll probably listen to it again.
It says he did Approaching Storm, Cloak of Deception. Yeah, and then a bunch of Jedi Order ones.
Yeah. Are you talking about
Alexander Adams?
Yeah. Pretty cool. Yep.
But yeah, now we got Jonathan Davis.
Yep, Jonathan Davis.
When does Mark Thompson make his introduction?
The very first book of Legacy of the Force.
Legacy? Yeah, okay.
I think it's Betrayal, I think is the name of the book.
Okay. They're a good duo. I like both of them.
Both of them. I agree. Let's just look at that.
Each in their own way. I like Mark Thompson for the Han Solo type books, you know, with those characters. Yeah. But I like Jonathan Davis for the kind of off the big five, or, you know, or whatever you want to call it. The main beaten path.
Yeah. I like
Darth Bane. He did a wonderful job with that trilogy.
I like that he, from here on out, he kind of gives the Yuuzhan Vong kind of like a Russian accent, and he does that so well. He's so regal, and some of his characters, like his Darth Maul or his Darth Bane, is so regal and strong. Mm-hmm. Just his voice when I hear him, because he'll use that voice for other characters, you know, other regal strong characters, and I just hear Darth Bane, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, because I'm like, I'm just thinking to myself when I hear that voice, I'm like, oh man, it just brings me back. And I don't care that it brings me out of the story I'm listening to, because that's how much I appreciate the book combination with the narrator. It's just a win-win. I mean, goodness. It was cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's another soapbox. And that's also all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
So, well, why don't you let our listeners know how to get a hold of us?
All right. So you can head over to Twitter. We're Legends Library, at Legends Library, and Legends Library Podcast on Facebook. And then you can also shoot us an email, legendslibrary@coffeewithkenobi.com. Head over there. Check out all the other podcasts as well. You got Lattes with Leia, Comics with Kenobi, the main, what do you want to call it, the World Ship?
Yeah, the World Ship.
The World Ship Podcast. And we also will have the Rebels Reaction starting up once that show starts again.
Yeah, very cool. And then
Tell
them about the library card, Luke. Tell them all about it.
I don't want to, no.
Oh, come on.
you made it sound really lame.
No, so it's cool.
Last year we tried something out. We called it the Legends Library Card. We needed a catchy name where we kind of did a little Twitter drawing and we invited somebody to join our show. They got to pick the book and we talked about it with them. So after this series, we're going to do that again. We'll get an actual schedule out and I'll put all that on Twitter and Facebook promoting it. So just kind of keep a lookout for it. Start thinking about what books you'd like to see, preferably obviously a one-off book or yeah, if it's a small duology or something, but preferably a one-off book. Start thinking of ones we haven't done preferably. I don't mind doing one that we have if it's really well or something, but it's been a couple of years. Right. I wouldn't mind that. Kind of get a fresh take, but preferably if you want to go back, see which ones we haven't done. If we want to, we could make a list possibly of books mm-hmm. we've done, send that out. But just start thinking about it. That's going to be coming up here in probably about 3 or 4 months.
Yep. And 3 or 4 months sounds, it's not a long way away. That's 3 or 4 episodes away, and that's not very much. That's like 27,000 New Jedi Order books. So. So I mean, it's not
right. 27 hours of Lord Nyx.
Oh, jeez, Lord Nyx again. I think that is a wrap. We'll put this
that's
one.
That's all I got.
That's all you got. That's all I got as well. Well, until next month. My name is Randy,
and I'm Luke.
And may the Force be with you.
See you.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.